Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Jason Mitchell fresh off of a pretty epic lake trout ice fishing trip in northern Canada. That's what this interview is all about. If you follow Jason Mitchell Outdoors on social media, you saw his post recently. This whole interview is getting the story, so let's get to it. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. Preparing for the upcoming ice fishing season means making great gear choices that will help you maximize your time on the water. That's where Summit Fishing Equipment comes in. The trusted choice for anglers who demand reliable, affordable, and top-quality forward-facing sonar gear and accessories for all the major brands, including Garmin LiveScope, Lowrance Active Target, and Hummingbird Mega Live. Check out their bestseller, the Summit HD CNC Shuttle. It's designed to protect your expensive electronics from harsh winter conditions while keeping everything portable for easy transport. You could pair that up with the lightweight yet robust carbon fiber ice transducer pole and the versatile Summit bag to complete the setup. Crafted from advanced carbon fiber, this forward sonar pole is not only incredibly strong, but also the lightest on the market. Their offerings don't stop at just poles and shuttles. Summit Fishing Equipment offers a full range of bags, mounts, and accessories to customize your fishing rig to your exact specifications. So whether you're a seasoned pro or just getting started, Summit has what you need to improve your experience on the ice. Explore Summit's collection at summitfishingequipment.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Summit Fishing Equipment is also on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. Anybody that's on social media or follows you on social media probably seen here this last week, the post about this recent lake trout trip. But for anybody that isn't on social media, you just got back from, you know, what could possibly be considered one of the most epic, you know, lake trout fishing opportunities in northern Canada. And this podcast is going to revolve around getting that story. So give us sort of the backstory, sort of the origin. Where does this begin? And tell us the story, man.
Well, you know, it's kind of a long story, Taylor.
Yep.
We've been planning this for a long time. And so here's what's interesting is, you know, if you fish up at Baker's Narrows or up on, you know, that Flin Flon area in northern Manitoba, you know, a lot of people talk about this Kamichelly Lake. It's a fly-in camp. A gentleman from Cranberry Portage built this camp. It sounds like it took a log cabin apart in Lynn Lake and somehow brought it and got it on the ice and then brought it across the lake. And it was just building this outpost camp must have taken a Herculean effort. I mean, it's unbelievable. And this camp was operated for many years, just small number of people fished it. And it was kind of a deal where this lake just produced giant lake trout. And what's interesting is the lake's about, I want to say 15 to 20 miles long, and it's full of islands and bays and, you know, your typical Canadian Shield Lake where you can spin around and get lost in about 5 seconds if you weren't familiar with the lake or if you didn't have GPS. Well, on the Manitoba side of the lake, there's actually a little outpost cabin from Lori River Lodge, and we flew into there last summer. And so they'll do fly-in trips where they'll take us a float plane in, fly in there in the summertime and either drop people off at that outpost camp or going to fish for the day. So we fished this lake last summer with Lori River Lodge. And, you know, it's considered one of the best lake trout lakes in that region that you could fly into for big lake trout. Now, when we were there, I mean, and you got to remember too, we're fishing on a 14 foot, maybe 16 foot boats, the biggest, no electronics. There's an actual rock on the shoreline, and somebody painted big lake trout here, and you fish in front of the rock and you catch lake trout. And then there's two spots that we fished, no electronics. We're using line cone reels so we could tell how deep we were. That was our, you know, so you drop down, you know, and it actually works pretty good, but I don't know how many fish we caught. I mean, we caught, maybe 40, 50 lake trout. I don't know, quite a few, but 36 inches was our biggest lake trout. We had maybe one other fish that was in the mid 30 inch range. And just lots of fish. But, you know, obviously you're in a situation like that and your wheels are turning, thinking, okay, we only fished two spots, no electronics, no nothing. And we caught this many fish and we caught one master angler lake trout. But, you know, you hear the stories about all these big fish. And so Baker's Narrows bought this camp that came up for sale on the other end of the lake, on the Saskatchewan side of the lake. So it straddles the Manitoba Saskatchewan border. And so they bought this camp. And, they basically, from what I understand, is they spent the whole summer just, you know, doing repairs and fixing and building things and bringing in supplies and flying in fuel. And, you know, they've got generators up there. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to winterize the camp. So then that way they can bring ski planes in there and have winter ice fishing packages that incorporate a ski plane. Okay, so that's next level. Now, when we were up there, they didn't have the hot water or the, you know, we didn't have hot showers or anything. We were fine. They're trying to bring a boiler in there. And this is, I mean, this takes a lot of effort to get stuff to this lake. I mean, it's no small task, but they had a staff that, you know, winterized one of the cabins so that you could, insulate it enough where you could run a wood stove and, you know, heat it in the wintertime. And so we had a wood stove, we had a diesel heater in the cabin, and we were comfortable and, you know, had a stove where we could cook food and stuff. And so there was a couple of guides out there with us. And what's interesting is that then they also, here's what's next level, is they also had a guy, Mike, spent the whole summer mapping the lake. Okay. And so we had a pretty good lake map, at least in different areas. I mean, the whole lake isn't mapped, but you know, pretty good. Enough of the lake is mapped where you can definitely be a lot more dangerous fishing, you know, especially for lake trout on the deep structure. So, you know, as far as finding spots and stuff, I mean, that's, that puts it over the top. And so, you know, there's been a few guides out there working, done a little bit of fishing. There was a 42 inch lake trout that was caught right off the dock this summer. I remember hearing about that. And, you know, they were out there working and doing just a little bit of fishing. And it sounded like the fishing was just over the top, you know, as far as big fish, for the amount of angling hours that were invested into this. I mean, it was eye-opening. And so I did hear that before we got there, a couple of the guides spent like 4 hours ice fishing on the lake and caught some big trout. But we were the first people to go in there and actually ice fish like dark to dark for consecutive days. So I mean, we were basically some of the first people to ever ice fish this lake ever. And it was unbelievable. I mean, it was just next level. I mean, taking a ski plane, you know, and then flying over the Canadian bush, getting to this lake. I mean, we flew over herds of caribou. It was just so cool, over the top, you know. I mean, we were all talking like this, like how do we ever top this? You know, it's the coolest ice fishing trip we've ever done in our lives. You know, take a ski plane, land on a lake, you're in a little cabin in the middle of nowhere. It was just next level, you know, and the fishing was unbelievable. I've never even heard of lake trout fishing this good. I mean, it was for big fish. I mean, it was unbelievable. I think so. The last day that we were up there for 3.5 days. Because we got, well, and so to back up, you know, we going up there, one of the vehicles slid in the ditch, and so we had to spend the night in the paw, one extra night than what we were planning on. And so we got a really late start. And so we had to get a tow truck and spend a night in the paw. We got a hotel there, and so that held us up a little bit. But we got up to Baker's then the next morning, and then so we didn't fly out until late in the day. You know, by the time I landed in camp, it was probably about 1 o'clock. And then here's what's interesting is it took about an hour of flying to get there from Baker's, almost straight north of Flin Flon. And then we, then the plane's got to turn around and go back to Baker's, fuel up, and then bring another group. And so you're looking at, you know, 2.5-3 hours between groups, you know. So myself and a videographer named Alex, we landed first. And then there's a couple of guides that were flown out there the day before. And as you know, we landed and we got all of our stuff unloaded. And, you know, I'm putting reels back on rods and pinching barbs and tying up rods and stuff. And like, well, do you want to get out fishing right away? I'm like, yeah, let's get out fishing right away. I just thought it'd be cool to catch a lake trout before the rest of the crew showed up, you know. And so the spot that we fish is about, I don't know, maybe 4 miles from camp. And so we were there and not, you know, 10 minutes we were there. And first hole, first drop, I drop down and I have a fish slack line me when I'm maybe 30 feet down. Boom, pop one. And it's like a 30-inch fish. And I, well, that's a good start, you know.
Yeah.
didn't even get down, you know, towards the bottom. And I had one slack line me. 15 minutes later, catch a 40-inch lake trout, which is, you know, huge. And then over the next hour, maybe caught like a 36 and a 35-incher, caught some other fish. But I mean, it was just like, wow, like we could have filmed a show before the other plane even got there. That's how incredible it was. And then the other plane showed up, and then the rest of the guys joined us, you know, 3 hours later. So now it's like, I don't know, 4 o'clock, you know, 4:30. It was late. And one of the guys, so I was with Scott, my friend Scott Larson, and Frank Ragnow. And Scott caught one right away. Then kind of tell the bite window was over, like we just weren't marking fish anymore. And then it got dark and it was over. Well, then the next morning we went out there, and because the flight coming back was so late in the day, Brett, the lodge owner, who's also the pilot that flew us in there, he spent the night and went out, came out fishing with us for a little while too. And he ended up catching a 45-inch fish. Just, I mean, biggest lake trout I've ever seen. And then, I think we, you know, so between Scott, Frank, and myself, I think we had like a dozen that were master anglers that were over 35 inches. I know Scott caught a big one. I want to say it was either 42 and a half or 41. We caught so many fish, it actually became a blur. Like we couldn't remember them all.
Yeah.
Like we were looking at photos, you know, and I don't have all the photos of every single fish. Like we were trying to share them and airdrop them to each other and stuff. And it's like, we caught so many fish. It's like, I know I don't have all the pictures of every fish. You know, I mean, it was incredible. Like it became a blur where we couldn't remember every master angler lake trout that we caught.
Yeah.
That's how crazy it was, you know? So we caught about a dozen that first full day that we fished. And that was the best day that we had. And then the next day, I want to say we caught 6 or 7. And then we got postponed where we couldn't get out. We ended up staying another day because it stormed, which was fine with us. I mean, there's no other place I'd rather be stranded than there. And we went out and I think we caught 3 more the last day. And so, I mean, it was just crazy. And we fished the same spot, you know, 4 days in a row. We were, you know, 3.5 days of fishing, realistically. For the other two guys, it was even less than that. But, yeah, it was just next. And here's what's crazy, Taylor, is that, I mean, you've been up there. I mean, you know, you look at, like, Clearwater and Athapap and all those different lakes. I mean, a lot of times, you know, we're catching the biggest fish, you know, Kissimmee. I mean, you've been all over up there.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest fish will usually get caught on dead baits, big Ciscos laying on the bottom, maybe a burbot, you know, laying on the bottom. We caught a few fish with dead baits laying on the bottom, but a big percentage of them came on tubes. I would say 85% of them came on baits we were jigging. And so to catch that many big fish jigging with tubes on, I mean, it was just
it's just, I mean, out of this fish, world.
It was out of this world. I mean, how those fish would, I mean, you know, they've probably never seen a tube jig before, realistically. How would they ever, you know, they've never been fished, you know?
Yeah. I one of the big things that I'm so curious about, the history on this lake is open water, like 90% of it. So I'm so curious in hindsight how you reflect on what you were doing to prepare and pack and get ready for this trip.
Well, you know, because of the logistics of taking a ski plane, you know, we packed pretty light. I mean, they had some clam hubs, like some clam 600s that they brought in earlier. They had propane, they had caches of fuel and, for the generator and stuff. And so they had a lot of stuff up there already that they've been flying back and forth throughout the year. And they were able to get snowmobiles up there of all things. And I guess that was quite a fiasco. But, I basically just, packed ice armor, some layers of clothes, lots of socks, wet wipes, rods, tackle. I mean, I brought some predators with for dead baits. But I mean, it was just a duffel bag and a tub, and packed pretty light just because of the logistics. It's like you can't bring everything up there. Snowmobile helmet, goggles, just in looking at the forecast looked pretty nice, or a lot nicer than it could have been. And we were lucky with the conditions. I mean, there was snow on the ice, but there wasn't a lot of snow in with the auger. We didn't have to have an extension, which most years you would have to have an extension up there. Most years, I mean, you'd get off your snowmobile, you'd be in snow up and slush up to your crotch. And we didn't have that much snow. Now, when we were up there, it's like 20 inches of fresh snow one day. And that got, made it a little fun getting around, oh, yeah. Just fresh powder. I mean, it was, a snowmobiler's dream, but, I actually packed kind of light. I mean, I had a tackle box full of some tube jigs and a few spoons and stuff, but, I mean, just, I had a assortment of, drop tine and those Northland level heads. I caught a lot of fish on that, some TC Moto tubes, just your, classic lake trout gear. It didn't really seem to matter, to be honest with you. I know Scott was using like a paddle tail with, that was like chartreuse. And then Frank was using some different things. I was using a white tube quite a bit and a glow with a red head. And it didn't really seem to matter. When they came in so hot. And what's so cool about lake trout is when they're on, it's like you can't reel fast enough and they'll catch it. I mean, these fish came in fired up. I mean, some of them really chased it around and smoked it. I mean, they just swallow it. And so, and what was really cool too is that all the fish we caught, we had great releases on every fish. Like there was no blood, all the fish were hooked in the mouth. It was really, great that way too, where, it didn't feel like we overhandled any fish. Got them back in the water right away, got a quick measurement, got them back down in the water. On the cold, gnarly days, we were able to fish inside of a hub where we weren't freezing fish. And so those fish are still swimming out there, And it was just next level. But as far as the rods and stuff, I mean, I had a couple of rods. I had a, spool of fluorocarbon. I had a, small tackle boxes with some lake trout lures and, some forceps, some clippers, and just the basics. I mean, we were pretty light that way.
But I'm curious about what some of the recipe for success or what some of the meaningful elements, like I'm thinking about how you talk about most of the lake is not necessarily mapped. Were you guys kind of picking spots based on areas that were mapped? What did the spots kind of look like? I'm just sort of curious, about what made that place special. How often were you moving and grooving? A little bit of that.
Well, to be honest with you, we didn't move hardly at all. We fished the same area all 4 days. And the reason being is it was so good, there was no reason to move, these guides have done the homework. I mean, there was, they mapped it out and there's this big, deep reef out in the middle of the lake that came up to like 60 feet, 50 feet in places. And then there's a couple of troughs in between that were like 70 to 80 feet. Then it dropped off in a deep water on each side, just a classic looking piece of structure. And it had a lot of different things going on. And, we set up camp on that and there's no reason to move. We just kept catching big fish, but it sounds like these guys have mapped out a lot of good areas like that. I mean, there's a lot of it that's still untouched. Yeah. I mean, it's just, and as far as anything else, I mean, if you're in doubt what to use for lake trout, I mean, can you beat a white tube?
Right.
Especially where these fish have never been fished. I mean, you can't beat a tube jig, We didn't have to tip it with, any kind of sucker belly or, we weren't tipping the tubes at all, which is, kind of tells you how fired up these fish are. I mean, you've seen it where if you weren't tipping it with some type of meat, it affected how many fish you caught. I mean, they were fired up. I think you could have caught them on a lot of different things, to be honest with you. I don't think you know, I don't think it would have really that much. So we just kind of stuck with the basics, you know. I mean, and that's the beauty about when you do any type of a fly, it doesn't matter if it's pike or walleyes or whatever, is like you're not bringing everything out there. You can't.
Right.
Right. There's weight requirements. So you just bring the basics. So like if you're walleye fishing in the summertime, you can't really go wrong with jigs and some type of a soft plastic, you know, or pike, you can't go wrong with like bucktails and spinner baits and just your, you know, you just stick with the basics. You know, it's not like you're going to bring every color. It's not like you're going to bring every thing that you can think of. It's the deal. You just get back down to the basics and you, you know, you just use the presentations that you know will work most of the time, you know? And so, you know, that's the beauty of going to a place like that is that, you know, these fish haven't seen a lot of pressure. They haven't, you know, they've, like in this case, you know, I haven't seen any pressure to speak of, you know, at least through the ice, you know, and, you know, just stick with the basics. So that's what makes it so special.
When you went up there, were did it seem like totally different, like rules of engagement with the lake trout? Like they were just so unconsciously hungry there. Was there, or you know, you talk a little bit about like bite windows, like how much of fishing up there felt like traditional lake trout fishing, like you've done in other places that maybe had some pressure versus, you know, like what was the difference there? Or was it just strictly just how many bites and how many big fish were there?
Probably a combination of both. I mean, it was classic lake trout fishing. I would say the fish were wound up and aggressive. I mean, you know, in the sense that, you know, we didn't have to tip the tube jigs, for example. That didn't seem to have any factor. These fish were really in the mood to chase. Sometimes they would, you know, shoot up and chase you up 10, 20 feet and just smoke it. It was, there was definitely bite windows. Majors and minors were important. Where, you know, we had maybe an hour and a half mid-morning and then an hour and a half late in the day where there was definitely a bite window. There would be lulls at times. Sometimes it would take a little while to start off in the morning, and then you look out of the majors at 11, and sure enough, 11 o'clock, those fish would just fire up. Sometimes you'd have an hour where the fish would chase you around, but they just weren't on. And then 2 hours later, you'd mark the same amount of fish and every one of them ate. So it was kind of classic lake trout fishing that way where, you know, you weren't, you know, we caught a lot of fish and we caught them throughout the day, but there were still definite windows where they really opened up and fired up, which is classic lake trout. I mean, on big lakes with big predators, that major and minor is so important. And it's really important with lake trout. And, you know, other than that, it was just classic lake trout fishing, but it was just like it was amped up. You know, it's like the percentage of fish that would eat, for example, felt higher. The size, the average size was something I'd never seen before. You know, as far as we caught more master angler trout most days than fish that were under 35 inches. You know, I mean, it was I mean, we caught some smaller fish. I mean, we did. We, you know, and they would kind of come in lulls where, or, you know, streaks where you'd catch, say, three fish in an hour that were, you know, 22 to 32 inches. Then all of a sudden they would disappear and the big ones would whirl through. You know, between us as a group, you know, we'd catch three or four of those big ones in a 45-minute window, you know, and then it would get quiet again and they'd chase you around and then they'd open up again, you know. And so you definitely get ebbs and flows through the day, you know, but you know, as far as standards for lake trout fishing, it was just over the top. I mean, you know, most places that I've been, I mean, you know, I've been to a lot of places where if you caught two or three lake trout in a day, you know, you're doing good. You know, I can think of like Fort Peck is probably a place where, you know, some of the highest catch rates that I've ever seen, you know, as far as, you know, on a good day, you know, you might more lake trout per person, you know, and just a beautiful average, but you don't see the fish that are, you know, 36 to 45 inches. Fort Peck can be kind of crazy that way where it's, you catch way more, you can on a good day catch way more fish on Fort Peck than probably anywhere else in the planet. So it makes Fort Peck so fun. Now just add, you know, 5 to 15 inches to those fish.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what it felt like.
Preparing for the ice fishing season means making great gear choices that will help you maximize your time on the water. That's where Summit Fishing Equipment comes in. The trusted choice for anglers who demand reliable, affordable, and top-quality forward-facing sonar gear and accessories for all the major brands, including Garmin LiveScope, Lowrance Active Target, and Hummingbird Mega Live. Check out their bestseller, the Summit HD CNC Shuttle. It's designed to protect your expensive electronics from harsh winter conditions while keeping everything portable for easy transport. You could pair that up with the lightweight yet robust carbon fiber ice transducer pole and the versatile Summit bag to complete the setup. Crafted from advanced carbon fiber, this forward sonar pole is not only incredibly strong, but also the lightest on the market. Their offerings don't stop at just poles and shuttles. Summit Fishing Equipment offers a full range of bags, mounts, and accessories to customize your fishing rig to your exact specifications. So whether you're a seasoned pro or just getting started, Summit has what you need to improve your experience on the ice. Explore Summit's collection at summitfishingequipment.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Summit Fishing Equipment is also on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast.
Yeah, like a 25-inch lake trout, or say 25 to 30 inch lake trout. When you start talking like 42 to 45 inch lake trout, like if they really wanted to, they could eat a 25 inch lake trout.
Oh, and you should have seen the head fish. I mean, just, oh my goodness. And you know, what's cool about these big lake trout is they're like big whitetail bucks. Every one of them's unique. You know, some of them had thin, skinny bodies, but massive heads. You think, wow, why is this fish so thin? Then the next, the plump, I mean, just built all the way through with a big belly on it. And, you know, they have these little parasites hanging on their fins, you know, these old fish, you know, and each one of them has a different head, a different face. You know, like I look at the pictures and like, not, there isn't a single lake trout that is, they almost have their own identifiable features. You know, when they get big like that, they all look unique and different. And it's really cool. I mean, I just think they're the neatest fish ever. And I've often joked with big lake trout, you know, it's almost like their eyes watch you, you know, like they're, like they're mad at you.
You talk about how different they are. You know, we've had these conversations before, you know, whether it's speculation or there's just proof and data to prove it, but, you know, talk about like subspecies of lake trout or, you know, is that a sort of a thing or a conversation there where some of them are different or do lake trout just sort of naturally do that even if they are what, you know, quote unquote, the same subspecies?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the biology of it was fascinating. Like I've read before, we're on a lot of lakes, there'll be different strains of lake trout. And there'll be strains of lake trout that just eat bugs, and they're a 3 to 6 pound fish, and they even spawn in a little bit different area, and they spawn a little bit different time of fall, you know. And then there's these big basin dwelling lake trout, and then there's the red fins, and there's several different strains. And the biology of lake trout to me is pretty fascinating. How you could have a handful of strains of lake trout in one lake and they don't hybridize themselves out of existence. You know, I mean, it's really fascinating. But from what we saw, I mean, some of them were really dark, almost black. Some of them were, they were all beautiful fish, dark brown fish, kind of like, remember the fish we caught on Kississing, how dark they were? They were just really pretty fish. That's all this lake was. They're really dark, pretty fish. Some of them had big round heads. Some of them had almost like an overbite, like almost like a parrot beak. Some of them, you know, some of them had like a really definite white stripe on the front of the fin, almost like a fall spawning color. Some of them, you know, but we didn't see any that had like the real red fins. But, you know, some of it might be time of year too, where, you know, in the fall they really get plumed up a lot more so. But, we saw some different colorations and, you know, and again, each one of them is unique, but I couldn't really tell, like, the, you know, dealing with what they call a Sisalette, or the, you know, different strains that are pretty unique, like you see on the Great Lakes. I couldn't tell anything like that at all, but yeah, it's definitely, I would say the build and the color on them, they reminded me of those Kississing fish.
Yeah.
That we've seen on Lake Kississing.
Yeah. Now for you guys, when you were working for fish, if you think about, you know, some of those, like, you know, some of the lulls, or, you know, like maybe outside of what you experience as bite windows, I'm curious about the fish, and like, were you guys more confident fishing way up in the water column? Is that where the fish were showing up, or were you fishing them off the bottom, or what was the fishing like?
I would say most of them were within 20 feet of the bottom. It seemed like it went in spells too, where we've seen a lot of big fish, like, right on the bottom at times, and then we'd be focusing on that. Then all of a sudden, somebody would catch one 30 feet down, and then you'd start paying attention to that a little more. So that seemed to kind of go back and forth. I think overall, like, you know, we were in anywhere from, say, 70 to 80 feet of water, and I would say most of them are, say, 5 to 15 feet off the bottom is probably an average, but there was a few that were way higher than that, you know. Yeah. And the ones you did catch high, if you caught one higher than, you know, or saw one higher than 30, 40 feet off the bottom, almost all those fish ate as soon as they saw it. You just get to them and they eat it, you know, so.
Oh, I'm just imagining that right now. I mean, sometimes feel the pressure on my wrist right now. Oh, just thinking about,
I mean,
it.
And some of them, you know, they'd chase 20 feet and they'd be swinging at it and swiping at it and circling it. And then you'd drop it down, they'd follow it all the way down to the bottom, then you'd bring them back up and wham, you know, I mean, it just, you know, and that's what's so fun about it, is it's, you know, fishing lake trout, at least when you're jigging for them, I mean, it's like the ultimate game of cat and mouse, you know, you're just trying to trigger them, you know, and sometimes you see like a rip where you get the fish to accelerate and then shake it and then they'd crush it. Other ones, they just wanted it kind of bouncing around in place. Some of them would come in and surprise you, like, whoa, where did that fish come from, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I caught a couple of them like that, where I was talking to somebody, not really paying attention, and, you know, talking about something, laughing about something, all of a sudden, wham, you get one about rip the rod out of your hand, you know? And so, yeah, it was good stuff.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I mean, did you guys feel like there was, I'm sure, just some inherent challenges, you know, being up there. I'm curious about that, you know, in hindsight, you know, as you talk about, you know, catching a few less of them, like on the last day or whatever, was there anything in hindsight, you know, if you, in a perfect world, do you think some hole hopping or spot hopping would have kept that high catch rate going or something like that? Or was there something maybe environmentally, you know, just like with the weather, the conditions, like what were some of the things that you feel like, you know, you were working through, you know, throughout this trip? I'm just trying to paint that whole picture.
Well, you know, I thought about that, and, you know, I don't know. I mean, the last day that we fished, the last full day that we fished, we're basically in a blizzard. I mean, it snowed 20 inches of fresh powder, 25, 30 mile an hour winds. And, you know, it was a deal where we just went right back to the well, hunkered down in the same spot where we caught all these fish before. It was noticeably slower. And we only caught, I say only, but we caught three master anglers that day. And was it because that was the fourth day on that spot and we were just wearing out our well? Could be. Was it because the weather was, you know, was, did we hit a peak bite window where it warmed up and got nice and those fish opened up? And we just kind of seen the full spectrum of what weather does to fish, because we kind of seen everything in that regard, from nice 20-degree weather with no wind to a front moving through that, you know, and then the fish really snapping, to being in the middle of the front and we're getting pounded with snow and strong winds. And did that affect it? Or was it a deal where we just spent too many days on one little spot? And if we would have slid down 400 yards on that same piece of structure, we might have encountered some new fish that just hadn't seen what we were doing yet. You know, the last day, we marked a lot of big fish that wouldn't eat, were those fish that we had already caught and they were a little gun shy. I don't know. We just weren't there enough days, but, you know, to add context, I mean, the last day was our slowest day. We still caught three fish. I think we had a 35, a 36, and a 40 incher, I think was what we ended up with on the last day. And, goodness, if we were anywhere else on the planet, that'd be phenomenal. You know, like if we were on, like that'd be a phenomenal day on Athapap, right? Or any of the renowned, some of the best lake trout water in the world that you can drive to. If each person were to catch a master angler in one day, that would be phenomenal, you know? Yeah. And so, you know, you have to have the context too. Like, oh yeah, that was slow. Like the last day was tough. Well, yeah, tough compared to catching a dozen, but that's
right.
You know, I don't know if you can expect that every, I mean, you know, that was just incredible, but you know, it was special. I mean, like the thing about it is all the guys that were up there, including the guides, I mean, just Amir and Phoenix, the guide out of Bakers. I mean, they knew how special it was too. So everybody there understood like, wow, like what we're experiencing is over the top next level. Like how are we ever going to top this? I don't know if you can, you know? And, it was special, you know, and it was a great group of people. I mean, at night, you know, we were laughing and telling stories and eating and getting rods ready. And, you know, no matter how hard we tried, we'd still be up till midnight, you know, and just exhausted. And then the next morning, you know, you're up at, you know, before it gets daylight and do it all over again. I mean, it was just like, we knew that this is the most epic, special fishing trip that we'll ever be a part of in our lives. I mean, 10 years from now, that trip is going to be unbelievable, but there's nothing like being the very first, you know, and seeing fishing like that. It was unbelievable. It really was.
It's like shooting a 230 inch whitetail buck.
Yeah. When you're 12 years old, you know, it's like all downhill from here. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It's all downhill from here. You know, it's like, how do you ever top this? Exactly right. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, you'll never see a deer that big again. Yeah. Yeah. And we knew that. I mean, it's like as soon as we got our feet wet and got fishing, we're like, wow, this is over the top.
What can you say about that body of water that produces that number of fish? Like, I'm just curious about like the ecosystem and just describing what it could possibly be that makes that place as special as it is.
Well, I think the fact that it has enhanced sophisticated fishing pressure, right? So you have a couple of flying outposts where people, you know, a handful of people go out and fish it out of bolts with no electronics. That can keep a lake pretty pristine, you know, especially lake trout, you know. So I think the component of having electronics and having some areas mapped out where you could really be technical as far as fishing precise structure and knowing what you're fishing and then identifying your locations that are a higher batting average, I think that was a really crucial piece to this. If we were been dropped off with no map, our experience would have been completely different, right? And so the fact that some guys were able to go out in boats and map some areas, that was what put it over the top. Okay. You know, it's a pretty good sized lake. I mean, when you look at a map of it, I mean, it's a pretty good chunk of water. Okay. So it's big enough. And I don't remember what the maximum depth was. I thought I heard 250 feet. All that water up there is connected where one lake flows into another lake that flows into another lake. Some lakes have lake trout habitat and lake trout, other lakes, you know, and maybe it's the strain of lake trout where some lakes, I mean, I guarantee you that you could probably find a lake trout lake 10 kilometers away that's connected that for whatever reason, the lake trout are smaller, or maybe it's a smaller lake, whatever. I don't know if anybody knows a lot about the lake, but I do know that there are big pike in the lake and there are some, you know, 28 inch walleyes caught in that lake by people fishing for lake trout. And so it might be a deal where they're just a big, healthy forage base of, you know, prominently Cisco or Tulibee, maybe some whitefish, and, you know, and every predator gets big, you know, and the fish definitely looked old too, you know. So now we did catch a few eel pout or burbot. We saw some burbot sticking out of the mouths of some of the fish. You know, it's just kind of your classic Canadian Shield lake trout lake, you know, but the wild card is that, you know, it has hardly had any pressure, you know. That's, I think, what puts it over the top.
Yeah.
You know, like all these lakes, like you hear the old stories of like Athapap and even Clearwater, you know, back before those roads were paved, back when it was just a, you know, a rough road getting up there and people would tear their axles out of their trailers to get there. And that was a different time where people kept fish, you know, like for example, people that went up there in the 80s and stuff and, you know, all that water was unbelievable and it's still unbelievable water. Don't get me wrong. It's phenomenal. It's some of the best drive to fishing on the planet for, I mean, you've been up there, big walleyes, big pike, big lake trout. But, you know, that was a different time where, you know, people kept fish back then. If they kept, if they caught a 35 incher, they kept it and they skin mounted it, you know, and so it was a lot harder to get to, and there's probably fewer people fishing it than there are today. But that was a time when if you, people caught a big fish, they kept it, you know, whereas now there's probably more people fishing. It's way easier to get to. It's paved roads, whether it's Clearwater, Reed Lake, Athapap, all that good lake trout water. You can blacktop highway the whole way. A lot better equipment, a lot more dependable snowmobiles, mapping, all those different things that go with it, where there's just more people that can fish, a lot more technical. And so, you know, those fish get more pressure. But the flip side is that big fish today get released, you know. And so it's kind of a deal where I think the numbers of big fish in some of these lakes are probably, you know, probably pretty good, but they can be tougher to catch because they're, you know, they don't spend their whole life swimming around and never getting caught, you know. And you wonder what the memory is on a fish. Like, you know, last year on Athapap, they had a phenomenal year where there's a lot of fish over 40, you know, and even over 45 inches caught on Athapap last year. This year it's tougher. And I was talking to the guides about it. And I think what's happening there is there's a lot of Ciscos. Like there's just a major, major Cisco hatch. And so you've got these fish that, you know, have been caught a few times and they've got way, way more to eat. It's kind of like the fish in an aquarium. You feed them a couple of times and then you feed them the third or fourth time and they're not running up to the top of the tank to eat. You know, they're just full, you know? And so, you know, you'll see some ebbs and flows like that too, you know, but I don't know. I mean, they're just, I think there's a component where when you're dealing with fish that have never seen a lure and never been caught ever, like as an ever, ever, I think they're way easier to catch than say a fish, a big fish has been caught once every year or once every 2 years. I think there's something to that.
So how do you reflect on a trip like this and you know, get some takeaways from it? I mean, maybe it's just purely just a great memory and, you know, and that's how you think of it. But I'm curious from a fishing standpoint or lake trout fishing or fly-in fishing, you know, this the adventurous element to it, like anything you learn, you know, about your gear or the fishing or preparation or just like any sort of like hindsight 2020 on a trip like that?
Nah, not really. I mean, it was pretty much... I mean, it was just over the top. And the fact that, you know, we were kind of an experimental group, you know, so, you know, Brett flew us in, you know, he's a pilot and he's done a lot of flying. You know, he can't fly commercially, right? He doesn't have that type of license where he can fly people in. So they're looking, you know, they'll end up contracting a ski plane to fly groups in. You know, the logistics will be interesting in the sense that I think it's almost going to be like a muskox hunter, a sheep hunter, where you're gonna have to plan several days just in case things go wrong. For example, you might get up to Baker's Narrows, for example, and you might have weather that's bad for 2 days and the plane can't fly, and so you're gonna be twiddling your thumbs for 2 days. Then you might get into camp and assume that you're gonna leave after 4 days. You might be up there for 6 or 7 days because of the logistics of weather. And so there's going to be some things that they're going to have to work through and figure out. And I don't, you know, that's up to them to figure that out, obviously. But it's going to be like a, like say like a muskox hunt or like an extreme hunt where you got to take a float plane or a helicopter in and just be at the mercy of weather where you're going to have some setbacks. You're just going to have to, you know, roll with that and be okay with that. But if you are, I think it's going to be the most over the top, extreme, incredible ice fishing destination package that you could ever do. You know, and is it going to be for everybody? I don't know. I mean, there's going to be years where there's going to be a lot of snow and slush on the lake and you're going to be getting stuck in snowmobiles and shoveling and dealing with that. But, you know, those kind of things too make trips like that fun. I mean, it's kind of a deal where when you're out in the elements and nobody can help you but you, you know, you just have to, you know, we call it embracing the suck, right? Whether it's, you know, mule deer hunting or elk hunting or sheep hunting, whatever it is that you're doing, you just have to roll with whatever it is and have a good attitude and then just let things happen, you know? And it's going to be an extreme trip kind of like that. But for people that want a little bit of adventure and, want something that's just like over the top that you'll never forget, it is, I can't tell you how incredible it is. I mean, just flying over that country in the wintertime, no tracks, no nothing, you know, nothing but caribou. And I mean, that's all we saw, yeah. You know, herds of caribou. And, you know, and to land on a lake like that, that's so pristine, you know, the whole area is so pristine and beautiful. And do that in the wintertime, it is next level.
Yeah.
Is it going to be for everybody? No. You know, it's kind of a deal where ultimately, if you could do it when you're young, that'd be perfect. It's kind of like, it kind of reminds me of a sheep hunt, where if you could do it when you're young, that would be ideal. Problem is, you can't afford it when you're young. But then when you can't afford it when you're older, then you're not in good enough shape. You know? So it's like trying to find that happy medium, you know. But I mean, if you're looking for something that's next level, I mean, that is it. I mean, it is unbelievable. Unbelievable. It is by far the most over the top fishing trip I've ever done. I mean, it was just over the top. We'll be talking about it for years.
Yeah. And probably like the last big topic is like picking your crew. I want to hear, now I've never fished. I interviewed Scott actually, and Frank. I've had, those guys have been on the podcast, and I know Frank's caught a lot of lake trout in his life. He's done a lot of lake trout fishing. I'm curious about Scott, like, or, you know, selecting your crew for this obviously is a big element. Any trip of this magnitude, you know, you got to be careful with, you know, who you talk about bringing along. I'm curious about sort of how you selected your team and, you know, how you guys came together.
Yeah. It's funny you brought that up, because we even laughed about that when we were up there. Like, there's only, you know, and there's a lot of people that I would have loved to take up there that would fit right in with us. I mean, I think of guys like, you know, Tony Mariotti and, you know, my buddy Vadova. I mean, there's all kinds of guys that we just, you know, love fishing with. And so, you know, the list of guys that would be phenomenal on a trip like this is, it's a long list, fortunately for me, and I count my blessings that I have so many great friends. But, you know, it's kind of a deal where, you know, we were going to be off the grid, you know, and, you know, people getting time off and everything else. But, like, you know, Frank is, he's solid. I mean, he just rolls with the punches, never complains, just happy to be out there, laid back, just, and he, if I think if you were to ask him what his favorite fish is, he'd probably tell you a lake trout. Like, he loves fishing for big lake trout. And so I got that. And then Scott, I've known for years, just fishing around Devil's Lake. I mean, I've known Scott for, oh my goodness, all of 25, maybe pushing almost 30 years I've known Scott. And, you know, he's as solid as it gets, you know, and he'd done some lake trout fishing out on Fort Peck, and he told me, he goes, hey, if you ever do any lake trout fishing this winter up in Canada, let me know. I'd love to go up there. I've never been able to go up to Canada and fish for lake trout. And so I thought, well, here's a way to.
It's like drinking from a fire hose.
yeah. So then, well, here, I got something for you. And so
that's awesome.
But yeah, and so I mean, we had a great crew in Phoenix and Amir. I mean, I met Amir when I was up there before, and really, I mean, he's just obsessed with fishing, just a pure passion, you know, just a great guy, fishy guy. And then Phoenix just fit right in with us. I mean, just a, you know, he works out of Lake of the Woods in the summertime and does a lot of musky fishing and stuff. Great guy, you know. And so we just had a great crew. I mean, there's no whining, there's no complaining, there's no, you know, everybody chipped in. It was just a great, great crew. Couldn't have had a better time, you know? And so it was, but you're right. I mean, there's certain people you don't want to be stranded on an island with, especially when you're cut off from civilization, you know, but like my iPhone, I could point it at the sky and then text and receive text by satellite. Like these new iPhone 16s, it's, when we were up in Manitoba deer hunting and he was able to text and stuff, like, wow. And then my phone was like that. Remember that old iPhone that people made fun of me on? That's like,
yeah, 10 years old. Crack screen and
cracked. Yeah. And so I'm like, well, it's time for me to finally retire my old beater. So I upgraded and got that iPhone 16, and so I could receive text and send text while I was there. They had a Starlink back in the cabin, so we could get a little bit of, you know, Wi-Fi to check emails and things like that, just to kind of keep your head above water if there was anything that was really important. And yeah, it was, you know, we were able to just get by, you know, because that's the other thing is, you know, if you have any responsibilities or anything going on, you know, it's nice to be able to at least text and kind of keep up with stuff a little bit just so that it's not overwhelming when you finally get back. But yeah, it was everything just worked out perfect. You know, it was just everything that we needed. So,
yeah. Yeah. And I think about, you know, a trip like that, or, you know, just a trip of that magnitude, you know, you guys all had, you know, to some extent, big fish experience, you know, so you mentioned it earlier, just how rewarding it was. You caught all these big fish, but you also, you know, you handled them clean and they all made it back. You know, this isn't, you know, necessarily for somebody to be their very first ever time, you know, maybe experiencing lake trout fishing, or, you know, or maybe it is, but also, you know, you can really appreciate it more when you have other experiences to, you know, maybe help you prepare for some of those things and just to capitalize on it when it happens.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's probably not a deal where if you've never ice fished for lake trout ever, I don't know if it'd be the thing to do for the first time. It'd spoil you first of all, but, no, I mean, I would say it'd be just the ultimate adventure if you just love adventure, love flying, and love getting back into some spots that are just over the top. And, you know, you know, I mean, I don't know what this package is going to cost. I don't think they've quite got that nailed down. You know, you'd have to check with Baker's and Arrows as far as booking. I know that they are booking stuff for this upcoming winter, for this winter of 2026, 2025. This upcoming winter, they're going to offer that. And, you know, there's a component with the ski planes and the pilots and everything where it adds, you know, a lot more expense. Okay. And so it's not going to be for everybody, but, if it's just kind of a deal where it's a bucket list thing. And, once before you're dead, you want to just do something that's just incredible. I can tell you that would check a lot of boxes. I mean, it was unbelievable.
That's awesome, man. I don't even know where to go from there. I just love getting the stories, reflecting on the fishing and the lake trout fishing and just how it sort of, you know, sort of compares. It's probably, you know, apples and oranges compared to, you know, maybe other lake trout opportunities, right? Like there's always going to be a time and a place for the great drive to destinations and the places with, you know, smaller average fish, but more of them. I mean, you know, it's all lake trout are just fun no matter where you go, but man, what a, just the top of the mountain, just the peak of all experiences, it sounds like.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, I mean, to put it in perspective, I mean, we've caught big fish on Reed Lake, Clearwater Lake. I mean, remember that year, a couple of years ago when we were up on Clearwater with Josh, I mean, how many master anglers did we catch there? Remember that was like 40 below zero. It was so cold.
It's so tough. Yeah. Tough weather.
But we caught some really big fish there. So, I mean, there's other, you know, you can do the big fish at drive to destinations. I mean, it's really phenomenal fishing if you don't have, you know, anything to compare to. It's just, you know, at the Pat too. I mean, we've seen, you know, 43 inch fish and they've caught, I mean, they catch 45 inch lake trout on an Athapap, you know, every winter, you know? So, I mean, and so it just kind of depends on what you're doing. If you have, say, a group of six people and want to do a phenomenal ice fishing trip for, you know, say something like, you know, each person has maybe $1,500 into, or a couple thousand, whatever it is. I mean, you can go to Athapap or fish out of Wekesco, for example, and have a phenomenal trip, you know, and where I'm guessing that, you know, the ski plane thing, it'd probably be three times more, you know, and if you do it yourself, obviously you can get by with even less, you know, and just like, say, go to Clearwater and rent a cabin at the Evergreen Lodge there, you know, and so that's the thing, is it just depends on what wherever you're at for budgets, you know, like my son's getting to the age now where he wants to go on a lot of these trips with me, you know, and it's kind of fun to go on a trips where I'm not filming. We can just enjoy our time together. And so, you know, that means that I'm paying the bill, you know, if I'm paying for him and me, you know, I'm doing a lot more do it yourself, you know, sleep at a cheap hotel room or a, you know, cabin or whatever. So it just depends on what you need and what you're doing, you know, and how many people one person has to foot the bill for, you know. So, you know, and you'll see that too when your kids get older. You know, you'll get pretty creative as far as how you get things done.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good way to
you know, you know, just you think of all the things you'll try to do when your two boys are older, you know. I mean, you know, it doesn't have to be over the top necessarily to have a great time, you know, especially when you're with your kids. You know, you just try to go somewhere cool and try to do something you can swing so you can do it and do it more often. And, you know, and there's a lot of great destinations. You know, you can make some pretty neat memories. So
from a filming standpoint, man, you've been doing TV. I don't even know what it is. Well, the 15 years or more, you know, can you even think of another time where you, you know, I mean, from a content perspective, like the, you know, when this video comes out and this story is told, you know, with you guys on camera, you know, a lot of people, you're going to be introducing this to so many people. Yeah. You know, like, have you ever done anything else, you know, in your video career that really sort of like opened up that kind of an opportunity, just for the world to observe?
You know, nothing quite like this, Taylor. I mean, we've done some incredible things. I mean, I got to pinch myself all the time. I've done so many incredible things. I feel like I'm the luckiest person on the planet. All the different places I've been able to go, all the great people I've been able to fish with, the destinations that I've been able to travel to. I mean, it's just like, you know, how do I ever, you know, I don't know how I ever got so lucky in life. You know, like with this episode, I mean, you know, you look at a half hour TV show. I mean, it's only realistically 20 minutes of footage when you take out commercials and the intro and all the other things that go into a TV show, as you know. And so, you know, you're looking at about, I want to say it's like 22 minutes of footage. Okay. We've realistically caught enough fish and have enough footage to probably have 3 or 4 half hour episodes. And so I think what we're going to do is we're going to do like a long form on YouTube. That's going to probably be an hour, maybe even more, to show everything. Okay. And there'll be a more like a, almost like a documentary. Then we'll have to edit a version that'll fit in a half hour TV time slot. And then we're going to have so much footage that, I mean, we thought it'd be cool to just do like a montage of all these big fish. Cause we got all this really cool underwater footage of these fish fighting underwater, waving that big whale tail back and forth and swinging their head around, blowing up bubbles. I mean, the underwater footage is unreal, you know. So, I mean, you know, what's interesting is I never realized this until we looked at so much underwater footage. Those big trout, you know, when they're off to the side of the hole and they're close because you can see the water moving, you see the waters, the bubbles coming up in the hole and they're blowing the bubbles out of their air bladder. It's amazing how many times those fish are like right on the bottom of the ice, just swinging back and forth from the bottom of the ice, trying to knock that jig loose. It's amazing. Yeah. I never realized how high they were when they're under the hole. I mean, they are right under the ice, trying to use that ice to beat that jig out of their beak. I mean, there's so much footage. I mean, it's, we're going to be going through it for days, trying to just get it all sorted out and figuring out what to do with everything, because it's, there, yeah. I mean, we could have filmed a show the first day. I mean, it was just, it was unbelievable. And, you know, and I guess too, you know, there's a lot of times where we go on a fly-in, especially, you know, where the fishing could be so insane that, you know, you could film multiple shows. I don't know if you ever went, I don't think you ever went up to Bud's Gonna Sail with us, but that's kind of the same deal, but on the walleye front, you know, where you catch so many walleyes and so many big walleyes that it's like, okay, you know, you know, you film a show in a day and you're there for 3 days, whatever. And, you know, there's not much more you can upgrade. There's not much more you can do. So you end up just fishing for fun. You know, that's how it was the last time my son and I went up there. It was like, we had a great show shot in a day. We upgraded a few things because you just keep catching these 28, 29 inch walleyes. And after a while, it's just like, okay, now we're just, now let's just enjoy the moment, enjoy the time and take it in and try to remember this because it's pretty special, you know. So there's a lot of opportunities like that. And Lawrence Bay Lodge up on Reindeer when we were up there last year. You know, same deal with pike. I mean, we caught so many big pike. It's like, wow, you know that you can't even remember them all. You know, it's just nice. It's a nice situation to be in. That's for sure.
Yeah, dude. No, it sounds like it, man. I love it. Yeah, I love the stories, man. I appreciate it. I think it's so cool. And it was fun to, you know, just kind of bug you. You probably haven't even been home long enough to change your clothes. And I've been badgering you here for this conversation. So I can appreciate, your time that.
I mean, tell you what, it felt good to take a shower, you know, I mean.
Yeah, but did you keep your offhand out of the shower just to keep that lake trout slime on it for a few more days just so you could smell it?
You should see our bibs and our jackets. I mean, they're just caked in lake trout. It's like a glaze.
That is awesome. You'll have to if you can think of it. You know, you'll have to like retire your tube jig there or something. You'll have to just kind of go back and look at your gear and maybe just sign one of them. And, you know, you could auction that off for charity or something like that. But that'd be just.
I'm going to use it till I lose it. That's, you know, that's how I roll.
I know it is. I know it is. It bothers me, man. Some of that stuff is so fun. They're like, oh man. So how many replicas you think you're going to get made off of this trip?
I don't know. I think it'd be cool to have a replica that, you know, cause you know, over the years, you know, we've tried to do replicas of some of the bigger noteworthy fish. On this particular trip, we caught so many of them. It's like, how do you get 25 replicas made? But I think it'd be cool to get a replica of that 45 incher.
Yeah.
And actually what's interesting is Jamie Rizzovi's actually working on a replica for, I think it's like a 50 inch fish that, one of their guides up at Baker's, John, I think his last name's Wallace. He's the old time guide up there that's been around for years. He caught like a 50 inch fish that I want to say is the lake record up there. And I actually saw a replica of that fish at Jamie's taxidermy studio. And it is impressive. I mean, it looks like it would cover a pool table.
Yeah, it looks like a giant king salmon from Alaska.
It's a big fish. Yeah, it's like 50 inches. And that was the biggest fish ever documented on Athapap, you know. And you hear the story about that fish. And we caught it in the summertime. And I mean, just over the top. So yeah, I know Jamie's going up there this summer. And I know he's got a fish replica to bring up to them. And yeah, there's a lot of history up there for big lake trout for sure.
Right on, man. Well, yeah, like I was saying before, I appreciate the time. We can close this one out. I appreciate the stories and just kind of getting the backstory too, and just sort of the backstory of, you know, how little is known about the lake, and just kind of some of the recent years and the hard work that's put in to map out just part of it and what you could, you know, what that turned into for you guys, you know, just to think about what that opportunity could be for the people that are interested, you know, down the road. I think that's going to be a fun one, but cool. So cool that you guys had a camera there to capture as much of it as possible and that we get to see that. It's just a super special deal. So yeah, definitely when that comes out, everybody's got to be looking forward to that.